Well, happy Thursday, everybody. It's Rich Birch from the UN Seminary Podcast. I think you're going to love today's episode because it's really all about investing in the next generation. And really, how do we take risks and what do we do? And some real practical helps with that. That actually reminds me, today's sponsor, this is very serendipitous because today's sponsor is Radical Mentoring. Listen, you know and I know that getting men to move is hard. Most churches can get them to show up to something like an event or maybe a Bible study or a small group, but there's a sense that there could be more participation, more depth, more passion, more commitment. Listen, Radical Mentoring could be that more for you and your church. It's an intentional small group mentoring process based on Jesus's mentoring approach. Radical Mentoring is designed to engage the older, wiser men in your church and leverage their experiences to activate the untapped potential of young, hungry men sitting in your church. Listen, I want you to join hundreds of other churches around the country, including North Point Community in Atlanta or New Spring in South Carolina, who are using Radical Mentoring today and actually seeing great success from it in leadership development, discipleship, and men's ministry. So here's the catch. How much does it cost? Absolutely nothing. It's crazy. These guys have put together a group of folks who've been impacted by the ministry and have making these resources available for now for free. So what I want you to do is go to radicalmentoring.com/unseminary. That's radicalmentoring.com/unseminary to create an account. And you'll gain access to all the resources that to get you started. You'll actually get connected to a real live person to help really get Radical Mentoring going in your church. Again, let's jump into today's episode. Excited to talk about how we can impact next generation leaders. Let's go.
Welcome to the UN Seminary Podcast. Are you looking for practical ministry help to drive your ministry further, faster? Have a sinking feeling that your ministry training didn't prepare you for the real world? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in pursuit of stuff that we wish they had taught in seminary. Buckle up and let's get started with this week's UN Seminary Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome to the UN Seminary Podcast. My name's Rich. Super excited to have you on today. We're going to be rewarded for this. We got a great conversation. I think it's going to be applicable to so many of us. We're going to want to lean in and listen. We've got Buddy Gozy with us today, a fantastic leader who's doing some really cool stuff. And I want you to learn from him and learn a little bit about, you know, kind of his journey. So, Buddy, welcome to the show.
Hey, Rich, man, a privilege to be here. I appreciate all you do for young leaders like myself just to continue to equip us going forward.
Oh, come on. Now I got to send you $20. That's the problem. No, I appreciate that, buddy. I love the story. I love kind of what God's doing in through you and through your ministry. So I want to hear more about that. But for folks that don't know, why don't you give us a little bit of a sense of the church you're at, Northridge Community Church? Tell us about it. If people were to arrive this weekend, what would they experience? What would that be like? Then kind of tell us how you connect with the church. So tell us a little bit about that story.
Yeah, absolutely. So Northridge Community Church, we are a 10-year-old network. I am the campus pastor, I guess you could say lead pastor of our Gray campus, and our desire is to be for our city. We really want to see city transformation. We really seek multiplication and not settling for addition. That's kind of been a shift that we've made over the last couple of years and reevaluating that. So we desire to plant more churches. We desire to help revitalize and relaunch some churches that are struggling and desiring to take these next steps. So what you can kind of expect for our church, we planted about 2.5 years ago. It's a younger church just because we have really young leadership. And, you know, young leadership kind of attracts a younger crowd. And so we have a lot of college-age students, young millennials, and we really try and make it, you know, authentic's kind of the buzzword, but we try and make it not just like something you're experiencing, but something you're a part of, to where you feel like you're at home when you're there. So it's kind of like that living room feel. We don't have a high budget. We're trying to continue to launch and to reach out and plant more churches. So what we try and do with what we have is just be creative to where it feels like almost like a living room cafe type feel in our buildings when you're there with us. Mm-hmm. So you're comfortable. We feel like when people are comfortable, they worship.
Now, I know one of the things and you'd mentioned it in there, you know, one of the things that makes your church, your particular campus, but your church in general as well, unique is really your ability to attract young leaders, high capacity leaders, Tell us a little bit about that. Why do you suspect that is? You talk about, you know, your leadership, but tell us a little bit about that. Why is that happening at your particular campus?
Yeah, I'd love to share a little of my story.
I
started following Jesus till around 17 years old. I go off to college, UT Knoxville, go Vols, huge Vols fan, and loved my experience there. And it's a big campus. You can kind of get lost in it, but Jesus was sweet enough to get me connected into a group of guys that really my freshman year, there were talents, there were gifts that were brought out of me. I got involved with the campus ministry called Crew. A lot of people know it as Campus Crusade. And my third semester of college, I was on the fast track to be a med student. I was pre-med, working hard, classes going well. Still to this day, know that I would have enjoyed going into medicine. But God starts leading me towards church leadership. And I know nothing about church leadership. I was raised Catholic. I don't know anything about what it looks like to step into these roles. So the only thing I know to do is I go and get breakfast with Jim Richmond, who is the lead pastor of Northridge Community Church. This is about 3.5-4 years ago. We only have two campuses at the time. And I say, man, do I have to go to Bible college? Do I need to go to seminary? Like, what do I do? And he said, hey, don't transfer. Finish, get a degree at UT, a secular degree, if you want to say something to where if you need to be bivocational because you want to be church planting, you can do this. So I quickly changed majors to, of all things, a food science degree. So I have a bachelor's in food science and technology from UT. Yeah, it's a degree where you can get a job that pays well with just a bachelor's, and I could graduate in 4 years, which was really important for me. So that's what I did. And for the next 2 years, as I'm going to UT just to kind of get this degree, I am trying to grow. I'm trying to get a hold of as many resources as I can, whether it's podcasts like this, books that I'm reading, because, you know, there's so many awesome ways you can be equipped these days. I'm interning at Northridge, which is about 90 miles away during the summers and coming home on the weekends and stuff like that. So I finally get to where I'm about to finish school. I got one more year. It's the summer before my senior year starts. And I go into Jim's office. I say, hey, I know I'm only 21 years old. I want to plant a church. We want to do this. And he says, all right, let's make it happen. So I didn't need a lot of resources because we didn't have a lot of resources. I knew over the next 9 months, we needed to raise some finances. We needed to raise a core group of people. So that whole year I spent, you know, I'm in class, I'm working on these food science, projects and stuff like that. But really my focus is building up momentum to this launch of this church to where in summer of 2016 with about 25 people, $30,000, we have a core group and we are ready to, start meeting, as our fourth campus of Northridge Community Church. Now, let me kind of fill you in with what our leadership looked like at this time. I'm 22 years old. I'm a food science grad with no formal, definitely no vocational church leadership experience.
Yes.
There's a guy, Dallas Crouch, who's 27 years old, who's our student group leader. He's helping a lot. He is a full-time school counselor with no vocational or formal ministry experience. Justin Mizell's 28 years old. He's learning how to play guitar so he can lead worship for us. And then my wife, who was my fiance at the time, she is a college student, 20 years old, about to turn 21, and she is our children's ministry director. So we have a church plant with a lot of people who have very little church experience, church leadership experience. We are meeting in a building that's in the worst location in town. It's not very attractive in any way. There is really no reason for this to go well. But Rich, here's the thing. I had very little to lose. I'm 22 years old. Like, why not? Let's just go for this. Let's see if we can figure this out.
Right.
Absolutely. But what we lacked in competency and experience, we made up with a knowledge of how to make disciples. Everyone on our leadership team knew what it looked like to invest deeply in people who don't know the Lord, as well as people who do know the Lord, and bringing out their gifts and helping them learn how to have spiritual conversations, how to engage the culture. And because of that, we felt confident we could transpose this onto our core group of people. And if we could do this, we felt like this thing couldn't fail. So we had a willingness to be devoted to the mission, whatever the cost. We had a desire to seek city transformation. And because of that, we just said, hey, let's go for it. And 2.5 years later, we're now kicking around the thought of planning two more campuses over the next 3 years.
That's amazing. So I think there's a lot of leaders who are listening in who they're a little bit astonished because they're like, man, the fact that as a, you know, young emerging leader, the fact that you would be willing to step up, I think is an amazing thing. The fact that, you know, Jim and the leadership there trusted you and supported you to the point where, hey, you were, you know, able to take those steps in. I'd love to pull that apart a little bit. What do you, as a leader who's in the midst of this, what was that experience like? What do you think Jim saw in you? How do you, you know, how do you develop the leaders around you? How are you kind of pulling people into your team? What does that look like? I'd love to talk a little bit about that.
Absolutely. So the thing I love about Jim Richmond is he saw my willingness and my desire, and he knew like, hey, we can work with that. Just kind of one step at a time. Whatever you're doing mm-hmm. faithful. We're going to see more of what you can do. And what I've learned from him and our leadership and what we're really trying to implement, is rethinking how we identify potential future leaders. So the problem is there are so many potential young leaders that are not given opportunities to lead in the church. And young millennials and now Generation Z, they so desire to be a part of something. They don't want to be spectators. As much as young millennials like myself, we catch a lot of, you know, grief for a lot of things. We want to be a part of change in the world. And if you don't give us a role in that, see you later, we will find something else to do.
Absolutely.
So high capacity leaders that are not using their gifts in the church, they will go to the secular world to do that, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but the church is missing out on how we can be pulling these high capacity leaders in, as well as there are people who have the potential to be high capacity leaders that will remain dormant because we're not speaking into their lives, their potential, and pulling those things out. So while some people may want to go to seminary, Bible college, go through church residency programs, which these things are great for equipping, a lot of times there's a lot of money and time invested in that, which can be good for people wanting to go into vocational ministry. But there are a ton of young leaders that don't necessarily want to go into vocational ministry. They are called to be on mission in their job, but they want and they should be able to step up in the church. So until we are able to learn to identify potential young leaders the correct way, we are going to dramatically be limiting the amount of leaders we raise up in our churches, as well as how we get them implemented in a cost-effective way. So here's what I mean. I think traditionally the church has looked at potential leaders in this order. First, they look at competency. Do they have an education? Do they have experience? Do they have credentials? Do they have skills? From there, they see if they're a good fit in the culture. You know, do they get our mission? Are they in tune with that? And then they might start looking at their ability to make disciples. Are they faithful, available, teachable? Are they leading people? Who are these people that they're leading? But the problem is I feel like those things are backwards. The most important thing I feel like we need to identify in potential young leaders is first their ability to make disciples. Who are they influencing? The people that they're influencing, are they influencing others? And then second, that's just up there, very close, is are they bought fully into our mission? Like, do they get our culture? Have they been with us long enough to say, I will be willing to do anything to see this thing succeed? So from there, the competency, which is important, someone needs to know how to run a children's ministry, how to lead worship, how to preach. Look, we can teach those things. I mean, in this day and age, like with the amount of resources that we have, like we can teach those things. And if we give them time and we set them up to succeed, they will learn that. But it's a lot harder to teach someone to be faithful, available, and teachable. It's really hard to teach people how to listen to the Holy Spirit and make disciples, and how to have that kind of just X factor of, you know, people are willing to follow you into battle because they believe in you. So I think there have been and will continue to be people who assume that they should be given a position of leadership in a church because of their credentials. And it's been funny in my experience over the last couple of years, people will come up to me and say, I used to preach at this church, or I used to lead worship here, or such and such. And I'm just not impressed with that. I'm not. I want to know who you're leading right now. I want to know, are you committed? Are you sold out to what we're doing? Do you have a willingness of that so that we don't have any type of division? We don't have any type of drift. And I think from there, we can begin to really grow people in competency.
Yeah. So there's so much I want to unpack there. So first of all, I just want to underline something you're saying here. And I've heard this in multiple other contexts that there, and we're seeing this all over the place, that there really is a decrease in credentialism in general, that, you know, there was a time where, so I'm Gen X, I was born in 1974, literally the lowest birth rate year of the 20th century, classic Gen X. And, you know, my dad's a boomer. He went to university and literally walked out. And because he got a bachelor's, that meant something, you know, there, that was like, he could get a job because of that, where that's just not the case. That was barely the case for me. For my kids, it's even worth less than that. It just is, it doesn't really mean anything. And so what has happened is we're seeing, you know, so many people like yourself really shifting towards a much more results-oriented orientation, saying like, well, what have you actually done? And in this case, it's like, who are you leading? Who are you developing? Which I think is a critical factor. You know, at the end of the day, you know, if you want to find leaders, find people who are leading and release them, give them more platform.
That's what it is.
It's harder to do than it is to say, but I think that's critically important. Now, when you think about, you know, other kind of young leaders, because obviously you've been able to gather around you a group of leaders who are following along. What are some of those other things when you kind of dive into looking at discipleship specifically? You know, what are some of those markers that you're looking at? Hey, maybe somebody who's a little bit earlier in that journey, but they're taking steps in that direction. What does that look like in someone? Because there may be leaders who are listening in today who are saying, man, I would love to release some kind of next generation leaders. But what should I be looking for? What does that look like, in someone who's just maybe taking steps in the right direction?
Sure. I think you have to know the leaders in your church. They have to be spending time and mm-hmm. they have to know the people they're leading. And so a lot of times I will just talk to my directors. I'll say, hey, who are you leading and who are they leading? And mm-hmm. if you don't know who the people that you're leading are leading, then you're not setting yourself up for multiplication. You don't really truly know them and their influence. So it's really identifying and you activate gifts when you speak into someone and say, hey, do you realize like what you're doing in this area is impactful? Because there's a lot of 20, 25, 30-year-olds who have just been told, I don't have a place in the church because I don't have that experience. I don't have that history. I don't have those credentials. And when you, because let's face it, when you're a leader in the church, you shouldn't and you can't have your hand in every single pot. You can't know every single person, but you mm-hmm. should be able to be in tune enough with your directors to be asking them, hey, not only who are you leading, but who are those people leading as well? And then when you see someone who has a willingness, just like they are faithful with everything that they do, despite where they're at in their level of their competency, you need to be giving them more. Like until mm-hmm. the point to where they say, hey, I either can't do anymore. And I give people the permission all the time. I say, hey, I'm gonna keep trying to pull more out of you until you say, I can't do anymore. And that's the relationship we have.
Right.
And in that way, I think you see faithfulness and willingness as really the most important thing in your church. And you have people who have that with a little bit of coaching. Again, they may never be a vocational leader, but they can really take ownership in an area of ministry for your church.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me play a little bit of devil's advocate here. So, you know, when you think about, again, being on the inside, leading kind of your first, you know, vocational ministry experience, significant platform, significant, like, hey, you're going to take this thing and run with it. Mm-hmm. You know, what are some areas where you feel like, oh, maybe it's actually been more difficult for you than someone who, say, has been maybe in this game for 10 years? What are some areas where you've had to shore up and say, oh, I've got to kind of invest in you know, myself or invest in my development to help kind of catch up? Because there's got to be areas where it has been a stretch for you. What are some of those areas that it has been for you?
So just the humility and the desire to continue to grow, like that's for myself and for everyone. If you're not humble to be as a leader, like you're just disqualified right off the bat. Right. So I've really had to take the approach of, you know, I'm surrounded with a network of leaders that have just been doing this longer than me and better than me. Mm-hmm. So whether it's, you know, myself as a communicator, whether it's myself as a leader, I was so bad at delegating when I started this thing off. I mean, just so bad at delegating. I wanted it to go so well. I over-shepherded everything to where I cared about it. It was my baby. This was my livelihood. Mm-hmm. So I was structured for us to be a church of 75, 100 people. Right. But that's not our desire. We want to continue to reach. And not only that, but we want to continue to plant churches. So I've had to take a step back and see what does it look like in a healthy way to delegate towards the goal that we have in a healthy way. So I think delegation for young leaders, because you can be so passionate, you can be so involved, where it's either you don't trust people or you're insecure, or get this, like my wife, I remember we first got married And she was like, buddy, you're just like running yourself into the ground. You need to start delegating. Mm-hmm. And I looked at her and I said, Madeline, I don't know what I'm doing. How can I delegate something? Mm-hmm. Like until you know like what you're doing. But it's understanding that there are people around you who know how to do this better than you do. And you need to work not just in your ministry, but on your ministry to develop it to where more people have a hand in it.
Yeah, very good, very good. Well, you've written a book that is launching here that we want to talk a little bit about. It's called Enough Someday Starts Today. Let's talk about it. Why did you write this book? What was it that kind of birthed inside of you to say, hey, I want to get this book out into the world?
Yeah, so I look around, and whether it's leaders in the church or just the body of Christ or really the secular world, there's so much fear that cripples people from taking the first step and trusting God to sustain them through the last step that I wanted to write a book to just help people understand that they are enough because God is enough. And for me, my whole journey has been figuring out as we go, me and God just saying, God has a history of whether it's with Abraham or Jesus did this with Peter of, hey, like I'm going to build the church on you as the rock, Peter, or Abraham. I'm going to start like this incredible thing that's going to go on for thousands of years, and we're going to have this nation. But what I need you to do right now, Abraham, is I need you just to go. And Peter, what I need for you to do right now is just trust me, and I need you to follow me to Jerusalem. God has a habit of not really telling you how it's going to happen. He just kind of calls you what needs to be done. So the focus of the book is really just to encourage, whether it's leaders in the church or people who are just saying, hey, someday I'm going to be a foster parent. Or someday I'm going to invite my neighbor over for dinner who I need to invest in. Or someday I'm going to go back to school. That if God gives you the what, the why will, or the how should be developed as we trust him, that we are loved enough, that he is trustworthy enough, that we are young enough. And God just asks us to be faithful, nothing more, nothing less. And he creates those results. So, Rich, I was really struck the first time someone said, hey, God doesn't call the qualified. He qualifies the called. And I'm like, that's awesome. But like, how does that happen?
What does that look like? Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
What does that look
Sounds
like?
Great. So
it's a little bit of my journey that I put in the book. It's the journey of other people. It's got a lot of just how God has done this in the past, in the Old Testament, New Testament, of just trusting God of that this really does happen. Like my church is growing as I grow as a leader. And there's kind of a direct proportion of that. God, more importantly than just getting the results from your life, he wants to develop you in the process.
So I have a similar kind of story where I started in leadership very young. And, the irony of it was the older I got, I found it harder to trust people of a similar age.
Yes.
When I got started, that there was this, this natural like, I don't know, like, I'm not sure I could, hand the keys over to someone. And I think there's a lot of people that actually have that kind of experience. When you think about, trusting the people around you, handing off, you talked about how delegating is difficult. I think it's difficult for all of us. What, tell us a little bit about what that experience has been like around trying to, entrust other people with the mission. And maybe it might connect to the book, but it also just to the church of, the church that you're working in can, serving. What has that experience been like where it's been difficult to hand off to someone else, maybe younger, and how have you overcome that?
Yeah, so I think there's this great fear in leadership that, man, even if you give something to someone that they won't be there for the entire journey. And this is what I mean, like there is leadership turnover sometimes. So it's hard sometimes to trust people because you don't know if they're going to be there in 6 months or a year or 2 years.
Totally.
So it's identifying people again, when you can see them that they are not only willing because they love the Lord, like beyond anything, I have to remind myself, they're not doing this for Buddy. They're not doing this for Northridge. They're doing it for the Lord. But also when they're just so in tune with the mission that they will run through a wall, they will do whatever needs to happen, that can ease you into knowing, hey, they're going to do their best. And here's the beautiful thing is God works through the mistakes as much as he does, the successes. So if we're in this for the long haul of developing leaders as important as the immediate fruit or more important than the immediate fruit, a good coach can only correct an athlete who's willing to both take the shot and then also be corrected after the miss. If we have humble leaders who say, I got the trigger finger. I'm ready to shoot. I'm willing to be humble enough to be corrected along the way. 6 months from now, a year from now, 2 years from now, they are going to be developed in a way that it can almost be threatening to where the people you are leading prayerfully one day should be better leaders than you are. Like, I am constantly trying to work myself out of a job to where I need to recreate a new job for myself. So it's just trusting people that they're not doing this for you. They're not doing this even for the local church. Like, they're doing it for their Savior who they love. And that's why when you can go not just on competency, but their discipleability and their willingness to be in tune with their vision, you know that even if they miss, they're not going anywhere. They're in this for the long haul.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would encourage people to pick up a copy of Enough. It's fantastic. Tells the story of kind of what's been happening. It's a unique story. You know, there's not a lot of people out there that can tell the story of, you know, planted a church at 22 and then it's still working. You know, mm-hmm. there are, yeah. and which I think would be an encouragement not only to, you know, us as anybody of any age thinking about how, you know, maybe God's called us to do something, to step out of the boat, to try it. Or it could be, you know, this could be a great resource for you to give to young next generation leaders in your church as like, hey, I would love to read this together and say, hey, what is this stirring in you? And what is it? What is this kind of, what is this calling out of you? And so I would encourage people to pick that up. Where can people grab copies of this if they're interested in picking up a copy?
Yeah, March 2nd, it's launching, obviously on Amazon, barnesandnoble.com. If you head over to buddygozy.com, there's some more resources there, free resources we have, like a 5-day video Devo, mm-hmm. blog post, stuff like that. But yeah, you can subscribe there for kind of latest updates. But March 2nd, pretty much anywhere you can find books to buy online, it'll be available.
Yeah, perfect. And so that we recorded this before March 2nd, but this will be released after that. So you can go over there now, grab a coffee. I would love for you to do this. And like I say, I would encourage you leaders who are listening in today, don't think about just one copy. Think about who's a group of people that you could buy this for. Maybe it's a group of, you know, next generation leaders at your church. Maybe it's your staff team. You know, you might look around your church and say, there, we don't have anybody that's 22 at our church. And so I'd say, well, why don't you get a copy of this for everybody on your leadership team and then challenge yourself to say, hey, who are the next generation leaders that we need to be pulling in, and let's use this as it, because even that alone could be, you know, the kind of risk step that, right. That you need to take as a community to kind of see the next level, you know, of, you know, what God's calling your church to. So buddy, I appreciate you being on the show today. If people want to get in touch with you, track with you, check with the church, that sort of thing, give us how we can do that. And then we'll close up the episode.
Yeah. Thanks, Rich, for having me. NorthridgeNetwork.com is our church. Again, you can go to BuddyGozy.com and there's contact information for me. Facebook, Instagram, at BuddyGozy Author. Would love to hear from y'all. And again, I am learning. I would love to hear from other church leaders too. Either it's just a word of encouragement or experiences from y'all. And my last thing I'll say is, church leaders, take a risk. Take a risk on young leaders. Be willing for them to walk with them through the long haul in developing them. Jim Richmond looked at me and said, hey, you're going to be preaching in 6 weeks. And I thought he meant to the student group. And he said, no, in front of 250 people. I'd never preached. But he took the next 6 weeks to develop me. And he said, hey, this is not a pass or fail, whether you do this or not. God has so much more for you than just this one sermon. But I'm just so thankful that a man that was 20 years older than me, much more qualified, looked at me and said, hey, I want to invest in you in the long haul through the failures and through the successes. And yeah, now we're just trying to do the same for the more people going forward.
Very cool. Appreciate being on the show today, buddy. I hope people get a chance to reach out to you. Thanks so much for being here and have a great day.
Thank you, Rich.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Don't be shy. We'd love to connect. Check out Unseminary Inbox. You can sign up at unseminary.com and we'll send you helpful training resources every week. Plus, you'll gain immediate access to our exclusive members area with tons of resources you can use. Connect with Rich on Twitter at Rich Birch or through email, rich@unseminary.com. Don't forget to check out the show notes for this episode at unseminary.com. It includes links to what we talked about today and more. Leave a comment. We'd love to hear from you. Did you enjoy today's episode? Drop by iTunes and leave a review. Thanks again for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Join us next week when we'll learn more stuff we wish they taught in seminary.